The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The national anthem of the United States probably is going to be changed to a police siren. As we in the United States are listening to the shriek and the wail of police and ambulance sirens, we become increasingly aware that we are in the midst of a violent fight against crime, a crime wave, like a cancer that eats away at the very vitals of the country, and that we are losing that fight. Back in 1963, only 5 minutes before going on a live World Tomorrow program, I had to sit before a television screen in a dormitory on Ambassador College campus and listen to the last moments of the frantic reporting from Dallas, Texas, that President John F. Kennedy had been shot. Moments before coming on this live program, I have to learn that one of the kooks who was a follower of Charles Manson, who went through the ritual of shaving her head and putting a cross on it and tasting the blood that ran down her head, who was a follower of a demoniacal mass murderer, has attempted to kill the President of the United States. From Sacramento, California, I learned that this red-haired protege of Charles Manson had advanced through a crowd with a loaded pistol pointed at President Ford at arm's length range in an abortive assassination attempt, and how then security men had seized her. She was apparently a follower of convicted murderer Charles Manson. Her name is Lynette Alice Trump. The president was all right. The gun didn't go off for some reason. She began screaming, it didn't go off, and security agents wrestled her to the ground, grabbed the president, surrounded him, and he stooped over, was hustled away to then stride briskly and erect on in to the capital of the state of California. The president was not hurt in any way, according to White House Press Secretary Ron Nessen. But he'd been walking along toward the Capitol, shaking hands as he went. It was only a 5-minute walk from the hotel when this girl pointed a .45 caliber automatic pistol at him, at arm's length, as if to shake hands out of the crowd. It wasn't clear whether she had actually pulled the trigger and whether it misfired or whether she had failed to pull the trigger, but the point is, she was charged with attempted murder. The president went right ahead to his schedule, and even as I was coming on the air live, was addressing the California legislature. In his opening remarks, he began talking about crime and about the need for federal legislation concerning crime. I would like to propose additional federal legislation concerning crime, that being that attempted murder against top elected public officials in the United States ought to carry the death penalty. I said attempted murder. I'm not necessarily even saying a murder threat. That would be for others to decide. It's not for me to decide in any event, but I am saying that when a person actually commits the act of attempting to take the life of the President of the United States, I believe federal legislation ought to provide a death penalty even for the attempt. I doubt very much if any such federal legislation is going to be forthcoming. But isn't it amazing that in our unbelievable, insatiable appetite for violence, that real life is even more violent than the lives we like to see portrayed before us on the glittering tube of television, where our young children see 11,000 homicides before they ever go to kindergarten? Isn't it amazing that in real life, as we hear bombs going off in the lobby of a big, beautiful hotel in London, literally severing one woman in half and others killed, about 70 injured and sent to the hospital, as we hear of a shootout at South Lake Tahoe, as we hear of Palestinian assassination attempts, as we hear of the IRA and people killing each other in Northern Ireland, we hear of little wars, but they're not little to the people involved in them. But at the same time, in the United States, our streets of our big cities and small towns alike become a virtual battleground. And we have to learn now that an urban American baby boy born in 1974 is more likely to die by murder than an American soldier in World War II was to die in combat. That's right. Babies born the last couple of years in the United States of America now run a greater risk of being killed, the victim of a murder, than the sons and the sweethearts and the fathers who wore olive drab and were in the army in World War II. No wonder we have to call it a war against crime. So now we have had another assassination attempt against a president of the United States. This same woman, known as Squeaky in the Manson gang, had denounced Ford in an interview with the Associated Press. I don't know why some of the people in media, and especially in the printed media, seem to enjoy the sensationalism which sells copy and sells newspapers of going out of their way to give a ready soapbox free of charge a willing audience of perhaps tens of thousands or millions in the case of a major wire service to the meanderings, the mouthings, and perhaps the insane ramblings of people who are known compatriots with mass murderers. I suppose it makes good reading to listen to a person who had stood faithfully outside the courtroom and hoped that Charles Manson, the demoniacal killer of so many people that it's hard to even know how many actually died at his hands or at his behest. I think I can say that, can't I, because he was found guilty. I don't think he can sue me from inside the jail, but then I'm not going to be surprised if he tries. We had an interview with Charles Manson on the World Tomorrow television program, as a matter of fact, and found him to be completely unrepentant, rather philosophical about the whole thing. But here was an interview with this same woman just in July of the same year. A major wire service interviewed her, and she said at that time that Charles Manson was really upset at some of the economic policies and the social policies set by Richard M. Nixon. I personally am of the opinion Charles Manson isn't welcome to an opinion about an economic or a social policy, because I feel he has already proved himself to be rather out of the human race. To have that kind of contempt for human life, to be able to perpetrate mass murder, and to be a plotter trying to perpetrate race war and the violent overthrow of the United States government, so far as I am concerned, does not really present the very greatest credentials for mouthing public opinions about presidential or administration financial or economic policies. But apparently some of the media were interested that this convicted mass murderer was upset about some of the Ford government policies, which apparently he alleged had been set by Richard M. Nixon. She said in that interview that Nixon really was still running the government behind a kind of a Ford face, and that the country was being run against the law. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Here is a woman who tries to kill the President of the United States, trying to take away from you, from me, from every other citizen in a free society, the right to go and to choose as the people who the leader should be, by a bullet instead of a ballot, and yet is still mouthing insanities about the law, still talking about the country is being run against the law. What higher, greater law is it to which these creeps, kooks, oddballs, scatterdazes, fanatics, and nuts subscribe when they're willing to pick up a gun and try to blast the life out of the President of the United States of America? She began to predict that our homes will be bloodier than the Tate LaBianca houses and My Lai all put together if the present policies of government continue. I don't think she went on to say that she then hoped to bring that about by shedding the blood of the president on a street in Sacramento. While she was being handcuffed, she was shouting, "The country is a mess." What an accurate statement. And people like her are what make it so. They're part of the mess. Addle-headed, weird, demented, crazy, insane people who think picking up a gun and blasting to shreds the life of a human being, especially a high government official, is the way to solve their own tortured, demented problems. The country's in a mess, she said. She said, this man is not your president. I guess she thinks Charles Manson is. She had been making frequent public appearances, but this is the part I don't understand. Here we have an amazing amount of outrage against practically anything in the United States that is institutional, that is governmental. We find today that there is a great deal of nitpicking about the CIA, the FBI, anything from a county sheriff to a chief of police of a big city is suddenly suspect. Currently, there's a great deal of furor back and forth between the Los Angeles Times and Chief Davis of the Police Department of Los Angeles. He is much criticized by the press, and he in turn criticizes the press. He is withdrawn from the Democratic Party. He's being criticized for that. He does sound off. Yes, he does. A lot of people are going to have to argue pro and con. That's not my fight. I don't want to get involved in it. I'm just saying that in the United States, there is an attitude today of anything which stands for, pardon these expressions, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but law and order. Now, by law and order, I don't mean pistol-whipping justice by some redneck sheriff deputies in the South that are trying to violate civil rights laws themselves. I do not mean what maybe you think I mean. I mean purely law and order according to a biblical standard that is also tempered with justice and mercy. So with that much of a clarification, let me say there is a definite mood in the United States of resentment and hostility against law and order and authority and law and order symbols. A shield is no longer a badge of authority, it's a target. A policeman is no longer the friendly man in blue who is trying to keep peace in the neighborhood so you can go about your life and your business in tranquility and productivity. He is a hated symbol of someone who is interfering with what you want to do, which may be kill your neighbor, steal from your neighbor, perhaps deal in drugs. So the policeman is suddenly suspect. The FBI and the CIA are suspect. Could it be that they are sometimes hampered in their job because of a lack of cooperation with the average private citizen? How can it be that when all of the various federal, state, and county, and city agencies, all of whom had to be cooperating in the visit of President Ford to the steps of the state capitol in Sacramento, could not have known that this weird kook was going to be in the audience, was going to be along the way? How could it be that the Secret Service surrounding the president, the CIA, with all their preceding trips, the FBI, state police, county sheriff's department, city police, I don't know who all might have been involved, but there had to be tremendous security precautions, and there had to be a great deal of fear and worry every time a president of the United States begins to advance toward a crowd with his hand out, sealing, apparently, that during any presidential tenure, the shaking of a few thousand at best hands is better than shielding himself behind a bulletproof limousine and being remote from the crowd, feeling that perhaps if he could show himself the more human, that he will win voters' hearts. I'm sure there is a certain political motivation, but I happen to think there may also be merely the human motivation. But why is it that we can have someone like this who makes open statements about the president, who plainly before one of the major wire services only months before denounces the president, is a known member of a mass murder gang, branded her forehead with an X during Manson's trial for the Sharon Tate murders, and according to prosecutor Vincent Bugliosi, who wrote that branding among the Manson family ritual was complete even to the tasting of the blood as it ran down their faces. And yet she's mouthing off statements before the Associated Press. She's standing in the crowd, and the combined forces of all of the police and the various agencies, the FBI, the CIA, and the Secret Service, don't know it. Apparently President Ford spotted the weapon before they did. He lurched back as if to protect himself in the instant before the weapon would have gone off. Apparently, she pulled the trigger. One of the Secret Service agents closest to the president, Larry Brundorf, spotted the weapon, seized the weapon, and wrestled the woman to the ground. And as he lunged, others shouted, "Get down, let's get out of here, let's go." And a group of some of the Secret Service men or agents grabbed the president, pushed him away from the crowd, and a few minutes later, he was on his way into the Capitol, where he was still speaking as I came on the air. Yes, we are in the midst of a new crime wave, and if anything is catalytic and seems to punctuate that statement, it has to be the attempted murder of President Ford on a street of the state capital of California. Yes, I mean what I say. I do believe that not only should there be an automatic death penalty for the assassination of a high public official, but I believe personally that an attempted assassination should carry the death penalty. But you know, you watch, you wait, and you see what occurs. You're going to see the media get on to all the lurid details. They're going to revitalize and call to mind the Sharon Tate LaBianca murders. They're going to go through the Manson family. It's going to make grisly reading because of this bizarre connection. She is now in jail under attempted murder. According to the laws, the way they are now, which insists on treating the President of the United States just like any other average citizen, maybe a working man or someone who'd been standing with a lunchbox and a hard hat, she is no more likely to receive a penalty for that crime than anyone else who might have attempted to kill anybody else on any street anywhere in the United States. We are in a crime wave, and by any measurement, crime is an ominous national problem. Since 1961, the rate for all serious crime has more than doubled. It's leapt up all out of proportion to population growth. It's not because there are more of us. It's because more of us are more violent toward each other. And we are losing the fight against crime, according to FBI Director Clarence M. Kelly. He says citizens have abdicated their responsibilities to work with local law enforcement authorities and says the public is taking the easy way out, the way of non-involvement. The way of, I didn't see it. I didn't see the accident. I didn't see the attempted murder. I didn't hear the screams out there. I was watching Gunsmoke. The way of non-involvement, the way of hide your eyes and pretend reality is not out there and all around you. And of course, then, the utter hypocrisy of all, which is that the United States is becoming a nation of criminals. 70%, that's right, 70% of the white-collar workers in the United States of America have perpetrated criminal activities against their own bosses, their own corporations and organizations at one time or another. 7 out of 10, 70%. And the $4 to $5 billion tab for all of white-collar crime makes all of organized crime look like a bunch of Sunday school picnic 4th of July pikers. The amount of money that is lost as a result of white-collar crime is far greater than the amount of money skimmed off by all of organized crime put together. The grisly prospects of you being killed, that is the unbelievable part of it. Three mathematicians at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology have been calculating trends in murder rates, and they find that homicide is increasing so fast in the larger American cities that 2% of all babies born in those big cities today will probably be murdered eventually, and the actual figure might be as high as 5%. 5 out of 100. That's pretty terrible attrition rate. Now, that's not talking about heart attack. That's not talking about other disease, drowning, 55,000 Americans dead on the highways from automobile accidents every year. That's not talking about all the other attrition that takes life in the United States. That's saying murder, homicide alone. 5 out of 100 in the big cities. So, if we think that current fears about crime are really exaggerated, then the actual facts are that there wouldn't be any way, in my opinion, to exaggerate them. The way murder rates are being reported, and presently the FBI uniform statistics use the scale of the annual per 100,000. So many people per 100,000. But the trouble is, that masks the fact that for every individual, those odds are cumulative year after year. The odds worsen in your favor, or perhaps I should say in your disfavor, year after year. I'll repeat what I said earlier, that the urban American boy born in 1974 is more likely to die by murder than an American soldier in World War II was to die in combat. Now, why all of this? Well, the criminal justice system is partly responsible. The prison systems are partly responsible. the entire attempt to either incarcerate and forget about by sweeping the problem under the carpet and pretend it is not there, which is one approach to the prison system, and the other attempt to rehabilitate by the assigning of probationary officers and trying to then get a subsidy from a state government, which is a horrible national and perhaps state sin from place to place, particularly in the California area, where the city of Los Angeles, so overcrowded and overburdened in the criminal justice system, is recycling criminals simply because there's nothing else to do with them. And also, they get a subsidy for the people who go out to become on parole, to report to a parole officer in an attempt to rehabilitate them, thinking that if they're out there on the street, which is where they were, which is where they got where they were, which is where they were when they did what they did, that they're probably far less likely to repeat the crime than they would be inside a prison. Well, the criminal justice system in the United States is becoming more and more a dismal and a tragic failure, and history will more than likely prove that that statement is true. Attorney General Edward H. Levi says we must understand that an effective criminal justice system has to emphasize deterrence. There are many causes of crime, but among them is the failure of our system to move quickly and effectively to detect and punish offenders. To cite the statistics that we are recycling criminals, a lieutenant of the Los Angeles Police Department is angry and frustrated at what we're doing because he says the L.A. police have to deal with about 15,000 gang members and associates. But the real perpetrators, the real leaders behind all of this mob of people consist of 160 human beings, and they are the ones that are behind the entire activity of the whole 15,000. But he says, in a frustrated outrage against the system, we can't get these gangs off the streets. We arrest them again and again and again, and they're convicted again and again and again, and nothing happens to them. They get out on probation, and nobody goes to jail. 70% of all convicted felons in the state last year got probationary sentences. I'll say that again. That's a felony. Felonious assault, arson, robbery, attempted murder, rape. A felonious assault, a felony, a major crime. 70%, 7 out of 10, out on probation. And 23% of those convicted in the state of California for burglary last year, almost a quarter, were already on probation for burglary. And incidentally, even though you might think all prisons are overcrowded, I'll tell you that California prison population is at its lowest point in years. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to the former Manson family member who was standing along that sidewalk waiting for a shot at the President of the United States, and but for the perhaps miraculous intervention of some kind that occurred, of causing a gun to misfire, or perhaps her own lack of knowledge or familiarity with the weapon, his life was spared at that moment. It could easily have been blasted from him, and he could have been an inert, dead corpse lying in the sunlit streets of Sacramento moments before I came on this broadcast. She tried to do it. She pointed the gun at the heart of the President of the United States. She is now arrested for attempted murder. If our entire criminal justice system is any guide, if it is any example, any measure of what you can expect, they'll probably send her to a funny farm and let her learn how to grow potatoes and paint paintings, and she'll probably be known as a new Grandma Moses in a year and a half and come to visit you and the kids, maybe complete with her cross on her head and her shaved head and her pistol in her hand. She'll be out in the street waiting for him when he comes out of the legislature, if the lawyers are sharp enough to get her out on bail and have her out in the street in time for the reception at the end of the speech. Now, no, I hope it's not that bad. President Ford says he thinks there should be federal legislation now to deal with crime. I couldn't agree more. But crime has a causal factor, and that causal factor begins right down at the point of what is human nature and what is human character. It begins on the living room with that third parent, where millions of American boys and girls have been abandoned to that one-eyed monster called television. If you would go back and look into the home life of that young girl, Of all the Manson clan, of all juvenile delinquents, of all criminals, you would find a tremendous and inordinate, a completely disproportionate percentage of them who came from broken homes, homes where violence, fights between parents, homes where there was no parent through illegitimacy, homes where abandonment or divorce was the way of life, homes where children were abused, beaten, misused, ignored, and neglected, and you will find there are causal factors that are easily traceable that result in people's twisted, demented thinking who on the one hand can mouth obscenities against the president and call for order and law, and then turn around and pick up a pistol and try to take the law in their own hands to take the life of a president of the United States, and feel completely justified and perhaps even a little bit self-righteous and martyred in doing so. Yes, we are, as FBI Director Clarence Kelly said, losing the fight against crime. But crime can be stopped. And if it isn't stopped, then America is going to be stopped, because crime from within, violence from within, the disease that erodes not only at institutions, the home, the school, the church, but the disease that erodes away even at government, at all of our various organizations, making veteran, hardened criminals out of people who are free to commit additional crimes, the revolving door of justice, the slap on the hand and turning them back out on the street. Oftentimes when police show up with people who have been caught perpetrating a crime, such as those who, in disgust, tossed their badges on the desk and said, "We quit," when they found out after arresting a couple of automobile thieves, the judge not only turned them loose but gave them the engines they had stripped from the cars back to go out and sell again. It's no wonder some of the police are quitting, are frustrated, because even though they find people in the act of committing a crime, they can't seem to get those people punished, so there is no deterrent. No, I advocate that there ought to be a strong, stiff penalty which is immediate, carried out instantly in a matter of days or weeks, in any attempted assassination of a top public official. I don't think either you or I are going to see that come to pass, however. But I still want to advocate it. You ought to write for a book that I've got for you that is brand new, up to the moment, up to date, that is on this entire subject of crime, that shows you the cause of crime and why it is that today in our society crime has become good business. You know, crime is generally defined by people as deviant behavior contrary to the accepted codes of society. A lot of people think that the changing mores and codes of society oftentimes has to do with changing criminal statistics, and I couldn't agree more. A lot of hardened police officers of 20, 30, and more years' experience could tell you the same thing. When we simply write off the book certain fringe area criminal activities, such as porno parlors and the like, that no longer is a crime, and so therefore it seems like you're almost experiencing a drop in crime because some statistics tend to be juggled. But this book had to be written on the curse of crime and the cause of crime, and how in our self-justification we have made crime pay. It talked about crimes of terror and crime around the world and how terrorism is rising. It's free of charge, no price whatsoever, this booklet on crime. And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters at your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.